Live at the Night Theatre presents Martha Scott as Emily, with William Ice as George, and Stanley Maxted as the stage manager in Our Town by Thornton Wilder, adapted for broadcasting by Cynthia Pugh. Our Town.
Excuse me.
Yes?
The producer asked me to come and say a few words about this play, do the linking and so on.
Oh, yes. You're the stage manager, aren't you?
That's right. I stage managed the first production. New York it was in 1938. Do I go ahead now?
Yeah. Right. On a green light.
Well, now, listeners, the name of Our Town's Grover's Corners, New Hampshire. It's just a little place. The population is 2,640. I'll try and give you a rough idea of the layout so that you can get a kind of mental picture. Right here, where I'm standing, is Main Street, with the post office, the town hall, and a row of stores with hitching posts and horse blocks in front of them. We don't have automobiles yet, for this is May the 7th, 1901, just before dawn. Just before dawn, as I said. That was one of Mrs. Webb's cockerels. The Webbs live in this brownstone house, and the next to it belongs to Dr. Gibbs. Mr. Webb is editor and publisher of the Sentinel. That's our local paper. And he has two youngsters, Wally and Emily. And Dr. Gibbs, well, he's our doctor and a good friend to everybody in Grover's Corners. Yes, sir. He has two children, too, George and Rebecca. These two families are what you might call the principal characters in the story of Our Town. There's Doc Gibbs coming down Main Street now. Got a call at 1:30 this morning. Baby case it was. And here comes Joe Kroll delivering the daily paper. Our paper, the Sentinel.
Morning, Doc.
Morning, Joe.
Want your paper now?
Yes, I'll take it. Thanks.
Anybody been sick, Doc?
No. Just some twins over at Mrs. Goroslavsky's. Joe, I see here your teacher, Miss Forster, is going to get married.
Yes, sir. To a fellow over in Concord.
Well, I declare. How do you boys feel about that?
Well, of course, it ain't none of my business, but I think if a person starts out to be a teacher, she ought to stay one.
How's your knee, Joe?
Oh, fine, Doc. Never think about it at all. Only like you said, it always tells me when it's going to rain.
Well, what's it telling you today? Going to rain?
No, sir.
Sure?
Yes, sir.
Your knee never makes a mistake?
No, sir. Well, I'd best be getting along. Got the rest of Main Street to do yet.
Oh, I'm tired. Fine pair of twins, those. Though Papa Goroslavsky's not too pleased about it.
Use them with the milk.
Morning, Doc.
Morning, Howie. Somebody sick? Pair of twins over at Mrs. Goroslavsky's.
Twins, huh? This town's growing bigger every year.
Seems like it is. Going to rain, Howie?
This mist, you mean? No, it'll burn through. Be a fine day, you'll see. Come on, Bessie.
Takes her time, don't she? But there, how old is she, Howie?
Going on 17. Bessie's all mixed up about the route ever since the Lockharts stopped taking their quart of milk every day. She wants to leave them a quart just the same. Keeps on scolding me the whole trip.
Oh, here you are, Frank. Good morning, Howie.
Morning, Mrs. Gibbs. 2 pints, ma'am.
Thanks. Seems like you're late this morning.
Yeah, something went wrong with the separator. Morning, Mrs. Gibbs. Morning, Doc.
Morning, Howie.
Morning, Howie.
Get up, Bessie.
Children, children, time to get up. Everything go all right?
Yes, I declare, easy as kittens. Twins, too.
Good. Bacon will be ready in a minute. Sit down, drink your coffee. You can't catch a couple hours sleep this morning, can't you?
Mrs. Wentworth's coming at 11. Guess I know what it's about, too. Her stomach ain't what it ought to be. This coffee tastes real good.
Then all told, you won't get more than 3 hours sleep. Frank Gibbs, I don't know what's going to become of you. I do wish you could go away someplace and take a rest. I think it'll do you good.
Maybe.
And look, You've got to speak to George. Seems like something's come over him lately. He's no help to me at all. I can't even get him to cut me some wood.
Is he sassy to you? Oh, thanks. I will have another cup.
Here you are. No. He ain't sassy. Just whines. All he thinks of is that baseball. George! Rebecca! You'll be late for school.
I'll speak to him.
George, look sharp.
Yes, boss.
Oh, well, guess I'll go upstairs and take 40 winks.
Mom, what's this I wear?
Don't make a noise, Rebecca. Your father's been out all night and needs his sleep. I washed and ironed the blue gingham for your special.
Oh, Mom, I hate that prayer.
Oh, shut up with you.
Every day I go to
the
blue
gingham,
I'm
looking
like a
dinner
turkey.
Now, Rebecca, you always look very nice.
Mom,
slap the both of you. That's what I'll do.
George, stop pushing. Do.
Won't have a sister. Gosh, look at the time.
You should have got up when I told you. Never leave yourself enough time, you dope.
While George and Rebecca are eating their breakfast, let's take a peek at the Webb's house next door. Wally and Emily Webb are also having breakfast, but young Wally's nose is buried in a book.
Children, now I won't have it. Breakfast is just as good as any other meal. I won't have you gobbling like wolves. It was such a growth in that effect. Wally, put away your book.
Oh, Ma, by 10 o'clock, I gotta know all about Canada.
You know the rules well as I do. No books at table.
But, Ma, teacher will be that mad.
You should have done your homework last night. And anyway, I'd rather have the children healthy than bright.
I'm both, Mama. You know I am. I'm the brightest girl in school for my age. I have a wonderful memory.
Eat your breakfast.
Eat your breakfast. Mrs. Gibbs will be saying the same thing to George in a bit. Seems mothers are all the same the world over. Well, they gotta be. Yes, I thought so. Young George has stopped eating and is talking to his mother. If he were a clerk, I'd say he was asking for a raise. Has that earnest kind of look.
So you see, Ma, if you would ask Pa...
I'll speak to your father about it when he's rested and not before. All the same, seems to me 25 cents a week's enough for a boy of your age. I declare, I don't know how you spend it all.
Oh, Ma, I got a lot of things to buy.
Strawberry phosphates, that's what you spend it on.
I don't see how Rebecca comes to have so much money. She has more than a dollar.
I've been saving it up. Gradual.
Well, dear, I think it's a good thing to spend some every now and then.
Mama, do you know what I love most than anything in the world, do you? Money.
Miser, that's what you are.
Eat your breakfast.
There's the first bell. Where's my books? I gotta go. Come on, George.
Coming.
Hello, Wally. Hello, Emily.
Morning, George.
Hello, Rebecca.
Emily, wasn't that problem the most awful old thing, the one about the bathtub and all those drain pipes?
Oh, I didn't know. I got it all right.
You did?
Oh, but then you're bright. Everyone says so.
Now, the chickens, that's the first thing. Corn's getting a bit low, must order some more. Here, cheep, cheep, cheep. No, go away, you. Here, cheep, cheep. What's the matter with you? Fight, 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 that's all you do. Hey, you don't belong to me. Oh, don't be so scared. Nobody's going to hurt you. Think you must be one of Myrtle Webb's for the look of you.
Hello, Julia.
Oh, there you are, Myrtle. This hen belonged to you.
Why, yes, that's Connie. Been broody all last week, and I've seen she don't like to know where she belongs. Get along home with you, silly thing.
Lovely day. How's that cold of yours, Myrtle?
Well, I still get that tickling feeling in my throat. Told Charles I didn't know I'd go to choir rehearsal tonight.
You tried singing over your voice.
Yes, but somehow I can't do that and stay on the key. I want to give myself a few minutes rest in the sun. String some of these beans.
Let me help you. How big do you like them?
Oh, about so big.
Right. Beans have been good this year.
Yeah, I decided I'd put up 40 quarts if it killed me. Children say they hate them, but I notice they're able to get them down all winter.
Now, Myrtle, I've got to tell you something. Because if I don't tell somebody, I'll burst.
Why, Julia Gibbs.
Myrtle. Did one of those second-hand furniture men from Boston come see you last Friday?
No.
Well, he called on me. First, I thought he was a patient wanting to see Dr. Gibbs. And he wormed his way into my parlor and... Myrtle Webb. He offered me $350 for Grandmother Wentworth's stall boy. True as I'm sitting here.
Why, Julius Gibbs,
he did. That old thing. Why, it was so big I didn't know where to put it, and I almost gave it to Captain Hester Wilcox.
Well, you're going to take it, aren't you?
I don't know.
You don't know? $350? What's come over you?
Well, if I could get the doctor to take the money and go away someplace on a trip, I'd sell it like that. You know, Myrtle, it's been the dream of my life to see Paris, France.
Paris? Well, Julia Gibbs, I don't know.
Oh, sounds crazy, I suppose, but for years I've been promising myself that if we ever had the chance...
How's the doctor feel about it?
Well, I did beat about the bush a little and said that if I got a legacy, that's the way I put it, I'd make him take me.
Mm-hmm. What'd he say?
You know how he is. I haven't heard a serious word out of him since I've known him. No, he said, it might make him discontented with Grover's Corners go traipsing about Europe. Better let well enough alone, he says. Every 2 years he makes a trip to the battlefields of the Civil War, and that's enough treat for anybody, he says.
Well, Mr. Webb just admires the way Doc Gibbs knows everything about the Civil War.
That's a fact. Dr. Gibbs is never so happy as when he's at Antietam or Gettysburg.
Well, if that second-hand man's really serious about buying the tall boy, Julia, you sell it, and then you'll get to see Paris all right. Just keep dropping hints from time to time. That's how I got to see the Atlantic Ocean, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry I mentioned it. Only it seems to me that once in your life before you die, you ought to see a country where they don't talk in English and don't even want to. Well, I guess I mustn't sit here dreaming. All sorts of chores waiting for me to do them.
Me too. I'll finish these beans after lunch. Thanks for helping me.
See you tonight.
While the ladies are doing their chores, we'll take a further look at our town. I thought you might like to have a little more information about it. Kind of a scientific account, as you might say. So, I asked Professor Willard of our state university to sketch in a few details of our past history, and Mr. Webb has very kindly agreed to give a short social report. And there are one or two people in the studio who may like to ask questions. Professor Willard... Ah, here he is. Just a few brief notes, Professor. Unfortunately, our time is limited.
Yes, Grover's Corners. Let me see. Grover's Corners lies on the old Pleistocene granite of the Appalachian Range. I may say it's some of the oldest land in the world. We're very proud of that here. Of course, there's some more recent outcroppings... sandstone showing through a shelf of Devonian basalt and some vestiges of Mesozoic shale. But these are comparatively new, perhaps 200 or 300 million years. Some highly interesting fossils have been found. I may say unique fossils in the cow pasture belonging to Silas Peckham. These may be seen in the museum at the university at any time. That is, any reasonable time.
And the population, Professor Willard?
Well, within the town limits, 2,640.
Just a moment, Professor.
Oh, indeed. Well, well. I understand that the population at the moment is 2,642. Mortality, birth rates constant.
Thank you very much, Professor Willard. I know we're all very much obliged to you.
Not at all, sir. Not at all.
And now the social report, Mr. Webb.
Here I am.
Well, now, if you just tell him a thing or two about the social side of Grover's Corners.
Well, it's a very ordinary town, if you ask me. A little better behaved than most, and probably a lot duller. But our young people here seem to like it well enough. 90% of them graduating from high school settle down here right away to live as soon as, well, when they come back from college.
Now, is there anyone here who'd like to ask Editor Webb any questions about our town?
Is there much drinking in Grover's Corners?
Well, ma'am, of course I wouldn't know what you call much. Saturday nights, the farmhands meet down in Ellery Greeno's stable and holler some. And we've got one or two town drunks. But they're always having remorses every time an evangelist comes to town. No, ma'am, I'd say liquor ain't a regular thing in the home here, except in the medicine chest. Right good for snake bite, you know, always was.
Is there no one in town aware of...
Just a minute, sir. Come forward to the microphone, will you, so we can all hear you. Thank
you.
What was it you wanted to ask?
Is there no one in town aware of social injustice and industrial inequality?
Oh, yes, everybody is. Something terrible. Seems like they spend most of the time talking about who's rich and who's poor.
Then why don't they do something about it?
Oh, well, I don't know. I guess we're all hunting like everybody else for a way the diligent and sensible can rise to the top and the lazy and quarrelsome sink to the bottom. But it ain't easy to find. Meantime, we do all we can to take care of those who can't help themselves, and those that can, well, we just leave them alone. Any other questions?
Mr. Webb.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Webb, is there any culture or love of beauty in Grover's Corners?
Well, ma'am, there ain't much. At least, why, is not in the sense you mean. Well, come to think of it, though, there's some girls that play the piano over at the high school commencement, but they ain't very happy about it. No, ma'am, there ain't much culture. But we got a lot of pleasures of a kind here. Well, we like the sun coming up over the mountain in the morning, and we all notice a good deal about the birds, and we watch the changes of the seasons. Yes, everybody knows about them. But those other things, well, I guess you're right, ma'am, there ain't much. Oh, Robinson Crusoe and the Bible and Handel's Largo, we know all that. And Whistler's mother, but that's just about as far as we go.
Thank you, Mr. Webb.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, I must be getting back now. I've got to mow my lawn. Grass grows fast this weather.
Now, we'll go back to the town. It's 2 o'clock. All 2,642 have had their lunches and all the dishes have been washed. Children have gone back to school. Only a few buggies on Main Street, horses dozing at the hitching posts. Doc Gibbs is in his surgery, tapping people and making them say, "Aw." That's Mr. Webb mowing his lawn like he said he was going to. Emily Webb is walking slowly up the street. She's finished school for the day, but she has a pile of books in her strap. Going to do some studying in the garden under that big butternut tree. Fir tree, she calls it. Yes, she's settled down in the garden seat. Finding it a bit hot, Mr. Webb is. He's going up the steps onto the porch, mopping his brow. Hello, there's George, peering around the gate, looking for Emily, I do believe. Well, well, what do you know about that?
Hello, Emily.
Oh, hello.
You made a fine speech in class.
Well, I was really ready to make a speech about the Monroe Doctrine, but at the last minute, Miss Corcoran made me talk about the Louisiana Purchase instead. I worked an awful long time on both of them.
Gee, it's funny, Emily. From my window up there, I can just see your head at nights when you're doing your homework over in your room.
Why, can you?
Yeah. You certainly do stick to it, Emily. I don't see how you can sit still all that long. I guess you must like school.
I don't mind it, really. It passes the time.
Yeah. Emily, what do you think? We might work out a sort of telegraph from your window to mine. And once in a while, you could give me a kind of hint or two about one of those algebra problems.
Why, George, yes.
Oh, I don't mean the answers, Emily. Of course not. Just some little hint.
Oh, I think hints are allowed. So, if you get stuck, George, you whistle to me, and I'll give you some hints.
Emily, you're just naturally bright, I guess.
I figure it's just the way a person's born.
Yeah. But you see, I want to be a farmer, and my Uncle Luke says whenever I'm ready, I can come over and work on his farm, and if I'm any good, I can just gradually have it.
You mean the house and everything?
Yeah. Well, I better be getting out to the baseball field. Thanks for the talk, Emily. Good afternoon, Mrs. Webb.
Good afternoon, George.
So long, Emily.
So long, George.
Emily, you might help me string these beans for the winter. Well, George Gibbs let himself have a real conversation, didn't he? While he's grown up. How old would George be?
I don't know.
Let's see. He must be almost 16.
Mama, I made a speech in class today. I was very good.
Finished a fight at your father's supper. What was it about?
The Louisiana Purchase. It was like silk off a spool. I'm going to make speeches all my life. Oh, Mama, am I cutting these beans big enough?
Try and get them a little bigger if you can.
Mama, will you answer me a question, serious?
Seriously, dear, not serious.
Seriously.
Of course I will.
Well, then, Ma, Mama, am I good looking?
Well, yes, of course you are. Oh, if my children got good teachers, I'd be ashamed if they hadn't.
Oh, Mama, that's not what I mean. What I mean is, am I pretty?
I've already told you yes. Now, that's enough of that. You have a nice, young, pretty face. I never heard of such foolishness.
Oh, Mama, you never tell us the truth about anything.
I am telling you the truth.
Mama, were you pretty?
Oh, yes, I was, if I do say it. I was the prettiest girl in town next to Mamie Cartwright, Banker Cartwright's daughter.
But, Mama, you've got to say something about me. Am I pretty enough to get anybody, to get people interested in me?
Emily, you make me tired. Now, stop it. You're pretty enough for all normal purposes. Come along now and be never going to be with you.
Oh, Mama, you're no help at all.
Talking of the Cartwrights, this seems a good moment to tell you that the Cartwright interests have just begun building a new bank in Grover's Corners. And they've asked a friend of mine what they should put in the cornerstone for people to dig up 1,000 years from now. Of course, they're putting in a copy of the New York Times and a copy of Mr. Webb Sentinel and the Bible and a copy of the Constitution of the United States and a copy of Shakespeare's plays. Well, I'm going to have a copy of this play, Our Town, put in the cornerstone, so the people 1,000 years from now will know a few simple facts about us. More than just the Treaty of Versailles and the Lindbergh flight, see what I mean? So, people, 1,000 years from now, this is the way we were in the provinces north of New York at the beginning of the 20th century. This is the way we were in our growing up and in our marrying and in our living and in our dying. Now, we'll get back to Grover's Corners. It's evening. The day is running down like a tired clock. That's the choir practice going on in the Congregational Church. Simon Simpson, the organist, is taking them through the hymns for Fred Hersey's wedding on Tuesday. Clever young man, Simon, but unfortunately, he's nearly always... Well, listen to him now. Reading. No, he's been thinking.
George? Yes, Paul? Can you come down a minute?
Coming.
Just finishing my homework.
Oh, I'll only keep you a minute. Sit down, son. George, how old are you?
Me? I'm 16, almost 17.
Well, what do you want to do after school's over?
Well, you know, Pa, I want to be a farmer on Uncle Luke's farm.
You'll be willing, will you, to get up early and milk and feed the stock? And you'll be able to hoe and hay all day?
Sure I will. What do you mean, Pa?
Well, George, when I was in my office today, I heard a funny sound, and what do you think it was? It was your mother chopping wood.
Oh,
there you see your mother getting up early, cooking meals all day long, washing and ironing, and still she has to go out in the backyard and chop wood.
Well, I suppose she just got tired of asking you.
Decided it was easier to do it herself. You eat her meals and put on the clothes she keeps nice for you, and you run off and play baseball. Like she's some hired girl we keep around the house and don't like very much.
Oh, Pa.
Well, I knew all I had to do was to call your attention to it. Well, here's a handkerchief, son. George, I've decided to raise your spending money 25 cents a week. Not, of course, for chopping wood for your mother, because that's the sort of present you give her, but because you're getting older. And I imagine there are lots of things you must find to do with it.
Thanks, Pa.
Now, let's see. Tomorrow's payday. You can count on it. Probably Rebecca will feel she ought to have some more, too. Oh, there, they're coming out of choir practice. I can hear your mother. Just about time you retired, don't you think?
Yes, Pa. Night.
Good night, son.
Now, do tell Mr. Webb I'm sure he'll want to put it in the paper.
Mrs. Soames is with them now. They'll be gossiping at the gate till all hours. I'm going in.
Well, here we are. Real nice choir practice.
Wonderful. Always like practicing for a wedding. Hymns are cheerful, sort of.
Muscle Webb, look at that moon, will you? If that isn't potato weather, I don't know what it is.
I didn't want to say a word about it in front of the others, but now that we're alone... Well, really, it's the worst scandal there ever was in this town.
What?
Oh, Simon Simpson.
Now, Luella, so...
But, Julia, to have the organist of a church drink, drunk year after year...
Luella...
Oh, Julia, you know he was drunk tonight.
Now, Luella, we all know about Mr. Simpson, and we all know about the troubles he's been through, and Dr. Ferguson knows, too. And if Dr. Ferguson keeps him on there in his job, the only thing the rest of us can do is just not to notice it.
Not to notice it? But it's getting worse.
No, it isn't, Luella. It's getting better. I've been in that choir twice as long as you have, and it doesn't happen anywhere near so often. Gracious, I'd better hurry. Those children will be sitting up for all hours. Good night, Luella.
Good night.
Good night, Julia.
Good night, Myrtle. Can you get home safe, Luella?
Oh, it's as bright as day. I can see my husband scowling at the window now. Really, you'd think we'd been to a dance the way men folk carry on. Good night, Julia.
Good night, Luella.
See you someday.
See you then.
Oh, so here you are.
Mm-hmm. We had a real good time.
Well, you're late enough.
Why, Frank, it ain't any later than usual.
And you stopping at the gate to gossip with a lot of hens.
Now, Frank, don't be grouchy. Come out a minute and smell my heliotrope in the moonlight. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, wonderful.
What did you do all the time I was away?
Oh, I read as usual. What were the girls gossiping about tonight?
Well, believe me, Frank, there was something to gossip about.
Simon Stimson far gone, eh?
Worst I've ever seen him. Holler hand, Frank. Dr. Ferguson can't forgive him forever.
I guess I know more about Simon Stimson's affairs than anybody in this town. Some people ain't made for small-town life. I don't know how that'll end, but there's nothing we can do but just leave it alone. Let's go in.
No, not yet. Frank, I'm worried about you.
What are you worried about?
I think it's my duty to make plans for you to get a real rest and change. And if I get that legacy, I'm going to insist on it.
Now, Julia, there's no sense in going over that again.
Frank, you're just unreasonable.
Come on, Julia, it's getting late. First thing you know, you'll catch cold. I gave George a piece of my mind tonight. Reckon you'll have your wood chopped. For a while, anyway.
9:30 p.m. Most of the lights in town are out. There's Constable Warren trying a few doors on Main Street, and here comes Editor Webb after putting his newspaper to bed.
Good evening, Bill. Evening, Mr. Webb.
Quite a moon.
Yeah. All quiet tonight, Bill? Simon Simpson's rolling around a little. Just saw his wife moving out to hunt for him, so I looked the other way. I don't know how that's going to end, Mr. Webb.
Oh, well, he's seen a peck of trouble, you know, one thing after another.
Oh, say, Bill, you see that boy of mine smoking cigarettes? Just give him a word, will you? He thinks a lot of you.
I don't think he smokes no cigarettes, Mr. Webb. Leastways, not more than 2-3 years.
Well, I hope not. Well, good night, Bill. Good
night, Mr. Webb.
Hey, who's that up at that window? Is that you, Myrtle?
No, it's me, Papa.
Emily, hey, why aren't you in bed?
I don't know. I just can't sleep yet, Papa. The moonlight's so wonderful, and the smell of Mrs. Gibbs Hilliard's room.
You haven't any troubles on your mind, have you, Emily?
Troubles, Papa? No.
Oh, well, don't let your mother catch you. Good night, Emily.
Good night, Papa. That old owl. George.
Yes, Rebecca?
I never told you about that letter Jane Clover got from her minister when she was sick. He wrote Jane a letter, and on the envelope, the address was like this. It said, Miss Jane Crowfoot, the Crowfoot Farm, Grover's Corners, Sutton County, New Hampshire, United States of America.
What's funny about that?
But listen, it's not finished. The United States of America, continent of North America, Western Hemisphere, the Earth, the solar system, the universe, the mind of God. That's what it said on the envelope.
What do you know?
Yep. And the postman brought it just the same.
Well, what do you know?
Well, I better be getting back to bed. Night, George.
Night, Rebecca.
One by one, the lights go out in Grover's Corners. Another day over, what you might call a typical day in the life of our town. And the time passes, and now 3 years have gone by. The sun's come up over 1,000 times. Summers and winters have cracked the mountains a little bit more, and the rains have brought down some of the dirt, and some babies that weren't even born before have begun talking regular sentences already. And a number of people who thought they were right young and spry have noticed that they can't bound up a flight of stairs like they used to without their hearts fluttering a little. All that can happen in 1,000 days. As I said, it's 3 years later, 1904. It's July the 7th, just after high school commencement. That's the time most of our young people jump up and get married. Soon as they've passed their last examinations in solid geometry and Cicero's orations, looks like they suddenly feel themselves fit to get married. It's early morning again. Only this time it's been raining. Thundering, too. Gardens are just drenched. And there's Mrs. Gibbs and Mrs. Webb come down to light their fires and make breakfast just as if this were an ordinary day. Guess I don't have to point out to the women who are listening that these two ladies have both cooked 3 meals a day, one of them for 20 years and the other for 40. No summer vacation. They raised 2 children apiece, washed, cleaned the house, never had a nervous breakdown, never thought themselves hard used either. It's like one of those Middle West poets said, you gotta love life to have life, and you gotta have life to love life. It's what they call a vicious circle.
Get up, Bessie.
Here comes Howard Newsom and Bessie delivering the milk. And there's Cy Kroll delivering the papers like his brother before him.
Morning, Howie.
Morning, Cy. Anything in the paper I ought to know?
Nothing much. Except we're losing about the best baseball pitcher Grover's Corners ever had.
George Gibbs. Yeah, I reckon he is.
Now all he'll be doing is pitching hay.
Whoa, Bessie. Guess I can stop and talk if I belong to him. Yeah, mighty fine ball player.
don't see how he could give up a thing like that just to get married. Would you have, Howie?
Can't tell, sir. I never had no talent that way.
Oh, there you are, Howie.
Morning, Mrs. Gibbs.
So bad about the weather.
Oh, I don't know. Been raining so heavy, maybe it'll clear up.
I certainly hope it will.
How much you want today?
I'm going to have a house full of relations, Howie. Looks to me I'll need 3 of milk and 2 of cream.
3 of milk and 2 of cream. Oh, careful, ma'am.
All right. I've got it.
My wife says to tell you we hope they'll be happy. No, they will.
Thanks a lot, Howie. Tell your wife I hope she gets to the wedding.
She'll get there if she can.
Morning, Mrs. Wells.
Oh, good morning, Howie. I told you 4 quarts of milk, but I hope you can spare me another.
Yes, ma'am, and 2 of cream. Here you are.
Will it start raining again, Howie?
Well, I was just saying to Mrs. Gibbs as how it may clear off. And Mrs. Newsom told me special to tell you as how we hope they'll be happy. No, they will.
Thank you. Thank Mrs. Newsom. And my papa's seeing you at the church.
Yes, Mrs. Webb, we hope to get there all right. Couldn't miss that. Come on, Missy.
Mrs. Gibbs is busy about the kitchen getting breakfast. Every now and then she stops and puts her handkerchief up to her eyes.
Well, Mother Gibbs, the day has come. You're losing one of your chicks.
Frank Gibbs, don't you say another word. I feel like crying every minute. Sit down, drink your coffee.
Thanks. The groom's up shaving himself. Only there ain't an awful lot to shave. Whistling and singing he is, like as if he's glad to leave us. Every now and then he says, I do, to the mirror. But it don't sound convincing to me.
I declare, Frank, I don't know how he'll get along. I've arranged his clothes and seen to it that his feet are dry and he's got warm things on. They're too young, Frank. Emily won't think of such things. He'll catch his death of cold within a week.
I remember my wedding morning, Julia.
Now, don't start that, Frank Gibbs.
I was the scaredest young fella in the state of New Hampshire. I thought I made a mistake for sure. When I saw you coming down the aisle, I thought you were the prettiest girl I'd ever seen. But the only trouble was, I'd never seen you before.
What?
There I was in the Congregational Church marrying a total stranger.
And how do you think I felt? Frank, weddings are perfectly awful things. Farces, that's what they are. Here, I made something for you.
Why, Julia Gibbs, French toast.
Ain't hard to make, and I had to do something. Here's the syrup.
Thanks. Well, how'd you sleep last night, Julia?
Well, I heard a lot of the hours struck off.
You know, I get a shock every time I think of George setting out to be a family man, that great dangling thing. I tell you, Julia, there's nothing so terrifying in the world as a son. The relation of father and son is the damnedest, awkwardest.
Well, mother and daughter's no picnic, let me tell you.
Well, they'll have a lot of troubles, I suppose, but that's none of our business.
Mm-hmm. People were meant to live 2 by 2 in this world. They're natural to be lonesome.
Julia, do you know the wonderful things that I was scared of when I married you?
Oh, go along with you.
I was afraid we didn't have material for conversation more than the last of a few weeks. I was afraid we'd run out and eat our meals in silence, that's a fact. Well, you and I have been conversing for 20 years now without any noticeable barren spells.
Well, good weather, bad weather, ain't very choice, but I always find something to say. Did you hear Rebecca stirring around upstairs?
No. Only day of the year Rebecca hasn't been managing everybody's business up there. She's hiding in her room. You got the idea she's crying.
Lord's sake, this has got to stop. Rebecca? Rebecca! Come and get your breakfast.
Good morning, everybody. Only 4 more hours to live. Won't be long.
Why, George Gibbs, where are you going?
Just stepping across to see my girl.
Now, George, you come right back in here and put on your rubbers. It's begun to pour again. You don't go out of this house without your prepared for it.
Oh, Ma, it's just a step.
You just do as I say, or you'll catch the death of golden cough all through the surface.
But, Ma,
George, do as your mother tells you.
From tomorrow on, you can kill yourself in all weathers, but while you're in my house, you'll live wisely, thank you.
Besides, perhaps Mrs. Webb isn't used to call us at 7 in the morning.
Here, take a cup of coffee first.
Back in a minute.
Lord, what a morning. Blue sky over there, though. Probably clear up later. My wedding day. It sounds kind of funny.
Morning, Mother Webb.
Oh, good morning, George. Goodness, you frightened me. Now, George, I hate to say it. You can stand here on the porch a minute out of the rain. But really, you understand, George, I can't ask you in.
Why not?
Why, George, you know as well as I do. The groom can't see his bride on his wedding day, not until he sees her in church.
Oh, it's just a superstition. Morning, Mr. Webb. You don't believe in that superstition, do you?
Well, there's a lot of common sense in superstitions, George.
Millions have followed it, George, and don't you be the first to fly in the face of custom. I tell you, you're not seeing Emily. Well, not yet, that is.
How is Emily?
I haven't heard a sound out of her yet.
Emily's asleep?
Oh, no wonder. We was up till all hours, sewing and packing. Now, I'll tell you what I'll do, George. You sit down here a minute with Mr. Webb and drink this cup of coffee, and I'll run upstairs and see she don't come down and surprise you. There's some bacon, too, but don't be long about it.
Well, George, how are you?
Me?
Mm.
Oh, I'm fine. Mr. Webb, what common sense could there be in a superstition like that?
Well, George, on the wedding morning, a girl's head is full of, clothes and one thing another. Don't you think that's probably it?
Well, I never thought of that.
Sure, girls have to be a mite nervous on her wedding day. Here, have some more coffee.
Oh, thanks. Gee, I wish a person could get married without all that marching up and down.
Yeah, every man that's ever lived has felt that way, George, but it hasn't been any use. Now, it's the women folk who build up weddings, my boy. And so for a while now, the women have it all their own way. Yes, sir, a man looks pretty small at a wedding, George. All those good women standing shoulder to shoulder, making sure the knot's tied in a mighty public way.
Well, you believe in it, don't you, Mr. Webb?
Yes, of course I do. Now, don't misunderstand me, George. I mean, marriage is a wonderful thing, don't forget that.
No, sir. Mr. Webb, how old were you when you got married?
Oh, well, you see, I'd been to college and I'd taken a little time to get settled. But Mrs. Webb, now, she wasn't much older than Emily is. Oh, age hasn't got much to do with it, George, compared with other things. Pass me the butter, will you, please?
Oh, here you are. What were you going to say, Mr. Webb?
Hmm? Oh, I don't know. Was I going to say something?
Well, I thought...
George, you know, I was remembering the other night the advice my father gave me when I got married. Yes, he said, Charles, he said, now look, start right off showing who's boss. Best thing to do is to give an order about something, even if it don't make sense. Just so she learned to obey, he said.
Well, but I...
Yes, and then he said, now, if there's anything about her that irritates you, her conversation or anything, just get right up and leave the house. That'll make it clear to her. Oh, yes. And he said, never let your wife know how much money you have. Never.
Well, I couldn't exactly...
Well, so I took the opposite of his advice, and I've been happy ever since. So let that do be a lesson to you, George. Now, don't ask anybody's advice on personal matters. Now, George, are you going to raise chickens on your farm?
What?
I say, you're going to raise chickens on that farm of yours.
Oh, chickens?
Yeah.
Uncle Luke has never gone in for chickens much, but I've been figuring on reading up.
Well, a book came into my office on the phylo system of raising chickens. I wish you'd read it. I'm thinking of beginning in a small way myself in the backyard. Now, I'm going to put an incubator in the cellar and I...
Well, you're talking about that incubator again? Well, I thought you two had been talking about things worthwhile.
Well, of course, Martha. If you want to give the boy some good advice, I'll just go upstairs.
George, Emily's got to come down and eat her breakfast. She sends you a love, but she doesn't want to lay her eyes on you, so run along now. Goodbye.
I'm just going, Mrs. Webb. Goodbye.
Myrtle, I guess you didn't know about that older superstition.
What do you mean, Charles?
Since the caveman. No bridegroom should see his father-in-law on the day of the wedding or near it. Now, remember that.
But I never... Oh, well. I better get on with the dishes.
I have to interrupt again here. You see, we want to know how all this began, this wedding, this plan to spend a lifetime together. I'm awfully interested in how big things like that begin. You know how it is. You're 21 or 22 and you make some decisions and then you're 70. You've been a lawyer for 50 years and that white-haired lady by your side has eaten over 50,000 meals with you. How do such things begin? George and Emily are going to show you now the conversation they had when they first knew that, as the saying goes, they were meant for one another. But before they do that, I want you to try and remember what it was like when you were very young.
And particularly the days when you were first in love. When you were like a person sleepwalking and you didn't quite see the streets you were walking in and you didn't quite hear everything that was said to you. You're just a little crazy. Will you remember that, please? Now, they'll be coming out of high school at 3 o'clock. George has just been elected president of the senior class for the next 12 months, and Emily's been elected secretary and treasurer.
Bye, Louise. Bye, Ernestine.
Yes, they're coming out now and going their ways home. Emily has just turned the corner and is coming up Main Street, her books under her arm, and here comes George hurrying after.
Emily. Hey, Emily. Can I carry your books home for you?
Why, thank you. It isn't far.
Excuse me a minute, Emily, will you?
Hey, Bob, if I'm a little late at the field, start practicing. Give Herb some long high ones.
Right. I'm awful glad you were elected, Emily.
Thank you.
Emily, why are you mad at me?
Oh, I'm not mad at you.
You've been treating me so funny lately.
Well, since you asked me, I might as well say it right out, George. I don't like the change that's come over you in the last year.
What do you mean?
Well, up to a year ago, I used to like you a lot, and I used to watch you while you did everything because we've been friends for so long, and then you began spending all your time at baseball, and you never stopped to speak to anybody anymore, not to really speak, not even to your own family you didn't, and George, it's a fact. Ever since you've been elected captain, you got awful stuck up and conceited, and all the girls say so. It hurts me to hear him say it, but I gotta agree with him a little because it's true.
Gosh, Emily, I guess it's hard for a fella not to have some faults creep into his character.
I always expect a man to be perfect, and I think he should be.
Oh, I don't think it's possible to be perfect, Emily.
Well, my father is. And as far as I can see, your father is. There's no reason on earth why you shouldn't be, too.
Well, I feel it's the other way around. That men aren't naturally good, but girls are.
Well, you might as well know right now that I'm not perfect. It's not as easy for a girl to be perfect as a man because, well, we girls are more nervous. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I said all that about you. I don't know what made me say it. No, I can see it's not the truth at all. And suddenly I feel it's not important anymore.
Emily, would you like an ice cream soda or something before you go home?
Well, thank you. I would.
Well, we'll see what the Morgans have got. Come on in. Afternoon, Mr. Morgan.
Hello, George.
Hello, Emily.
Now, what'll you have?
Why, Emily Webb, what have you been crying about? She got an awful scare, Mr. Morgan. That hardware store wagon almost ran over her. Everybody says Tom Huckins drives like a crazy man.
Yes, he does.
Here, take a good drink of water, Emily. Why, you look all shook up.
Thank you.
I tell you, you've got to look both ways before you cross Main Street these days. That's right. Now, drink it all up. Now, what'll you have?
Oh, I'll have a strawberry phosphate, Mr. Morgan.
Oh, no. No, Emily, you have a soda with me.
Well,
two strawberry ice cream sodas, Mr. Morgan.
Two strawberry ice cream sodas, yes, sir. You know, the best thing to do is just stay home now they're bringing in these automobiles. Why, I can remember when dogs used to sleep in the middle of the street all day and nothing ever came to disturb them. Now, there you are. I'm coming, Mrs. Ellis.
That's so expensive.
Oh, now, don't you think of that, Emily. We're celebrating our election. And you know what else I'm celebrating?
No.
Well, I'm celebrating because I've got a friend who tells me all the things that ought to be told me.
George, please don't think of that. I don't know why I said it. It's not true.
No, Emily, now you stick to it. I'm glad you spoke to me like you did. But you'll see, I'm going to change so quick, you'll bet I'm going to change. And, well, Emily, I want to ask you a favor.
What?
Emily, if I go away to State Agriculture College next year, will you write me a letter once in a while?
I certainly will, George. It certainly seems like being away 3 years, you get out of touch with things. Maybe letters from Grover's Corners wouldn't be so interesting after a while. Grover's Corners isn't a very important place when you think of all New Hampshire. But I think it's a very nice town.
A day wouldn't come when I wouldn't want to know everything about our town.
Well, I'll try to make my letters interesting.
You know, Emily, whenever I meet a farmer, I ask him if he thinks it's important to go to agriculture school to be a good farmer.
Why, George.
Yeah, and some of them say it's even a waste of time. You can get all that stuff anyway in the pamphlets the government sends out, and Uncle Luke's getting old. He's about ready for me to start in taking over his farm tomorrow if I could.
Right.
And like you say, being gone all that time and other places and meeting other people, gosh, if, well, anything like that can happen. I don't want to go away. I guess new people probably aren't any better than the old ones. I'll bet they almost never are. Emily, I feel that you're as good a friend as I've got. I don't need to go and meet people in other towns.
But, George, maybe it's very important for you to go and learn all that about cattle judging and soils and those things. Of course, I don't know.
Emily, I'm going to make up my mind right now. I won't go. I'll tell Pa about it tonight.
Well, George, I don't see why you have to decide right now. It's a whole year away.
Emily, I'm glad you spoke to me about that fault in my character. Oh. What you said was right, but there was one thing that was wrong in it. That's where you said I wasn't noticing people and you, for instance. Why, you say you were watching me when I did everything. Well, I was doing the same about you all the time.
Were you, George?
Sure. I always thought about you as one of the chief people I thought about. I always made sure where you were sitting and who you were with. And for 3 days now, I've tried to walk home with you, but something always got in the way. And for you, and you walked home with Miss Corcoran.
Oh, George. Life's awful funny. How could I have known that? I thought...
Listen, Emily, I'm going to tell you why I'm not going to agricultural school. I think once you've found a person you're very fond of, I mean a person who's fond of you, too, and who likes you well enough to be interested in your character, well, I think that's just as important as college is, and even more so.
I think that's awfully important, too.
Emily.
Yes, George?
Emily, if I do improve and make a big change, would you be... Well, I mean, could you be...
Oh, I am now. And I always have been.
So I guess this is an important talk we've been having.
Yes. Yes.
Wait just a minute and I'll walk you home.
Yes, George.
Oh, Mr. Morgan, I'll have to go home and get the money to pay you for this.
What's that? George Gibbs, do you mean to tell me...
Yes,
that
I had reasons, Mr. Morgan. Look, here's my gold watch to keep until I come back with the money.
That's all right, George. You keep your watch. I'll trust you.
I'll be back in 5 minutes.
I'll trust you 10 years, George. Not a day over. Got all over your shock, Emily?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Morgan. It was nothing.
I'm ready, Emily.
Yes, George.
There they go, side by side. Very straight, radiant, not looking at each other. Well, that's how it began. And now we'll get on with the wedding. There are a lot of things to be said about a wedding. There are a lot of thoughts that go on during a wedding. We can't get them all into one wedding naturally, especially not into a wedding at Grover's Corners, where weddings are mighty short and plain. In this play, I take the part of the minister. That gives me the right to say a few things more. Yes, for a while now, the play gets pretty serious. You see, some churches say that marriage is a sacrament. I don't quite know what that means, but I can guess. Like Mrs. Gibbs said a few minutes ago, people are supposed to live two by two. And this is a good wedding. The people are young, but they come from a good state, and they chose right. The real hero of this scene is none at all, and you all know who that is. Like one of those European fellas said, every time a child is born into the world, it's nature's attempt to make a perfect human being. Well, we've seen nature pushing and contriving for some time now. We all know she's interested in quantity, but I think she's interested in quality, too. Maybe she's trying to make another good governor for New Hampshire. That's what Emily hopes. Well, that's all my sermon. It wasn't very long, anyway. Here they come into the church. The townspeople and friends, and up in the front, the relations of Gibbs and Mrs. Webb. Mrs. Webb is crying a little.
I don't know why on earth I'm crying. I suppose there isn't anything to cry about. This morning, the breakfast just came over me. There was Emily eating her breakfast as she'd done for 17 years. She's gone out of my house. I suppose that's it. And Emily, she suddenly said, I can't eat another mouthful. And she put her head on the table and she cried. Oh, I've got to say it. You know, there's something downright cruel in sending girls out into marriages like that. It's cruel, I know. But I just couldn't get myself to say it. I went into this blind as a bad myself. The whole world's wrong. That's what's the matter. George is just coming up the aisle. Oh, dear, I don't wish I could stop crying.
Yes, as I said, there's a lot of thoughts go on at weddings. George, for instance, is looking kind of pale and tense as he comes slowly up the aisle. He's thinking of a few minutes ago when he reached the church and stood in the porch looking at all those people waiting inside.
Why is everybody pushing me so?
Why, George, you wanted it?
No, Ma, listen to me.
No, no, George, you're a man now.
Listen, Ma, for the last time I asked you, all I want to do is to be a fella.
George, if anyone should hear you, now stop. Why, I'm ashamed of you.
Oh, well. Where's Emily?
She'll be here any minute. George, you gave us such a turn.
Cheer up, Ma. I'm getting married. Come on in.
No. No. Let me catch my breath a minute.
Now, Ma, you say Thursday night. Emily and I are coming over to dinner every Thursday night. You'll see. Why, Ma, what are you crying for? Come on, we got to get ready for this.
Emily, too, is frightened as she stands on the porch in her white dress, leaning on her father's arm.
I never felt so alone in my whole life. And George, standing up there waiting for me, I hate him. I wish I were dead.
Now, Emily, don't get upset.
Papa, darling, I don't want to get married. Why can't I stay for a while just as I am? Let's go away.
No, Emily, now stop and think a minute.
Don't you remember what you used to say all the time that I was your girl? Well, there must be lots of places we can go to. I'd work for you. I'd keep house.
You mustn't think of such things. Oh, you're just nervous. Why, look, here's George coming to see what you're waiting for. Why, he's the best young fellow in the world.
But, Papa,
George, giving away my daughter.
You think you can take care of her?
I want to, Mr. Webb. I want to try. Emily, I'm going to do my best. I love you, Emily. I need you.
Well, if you love me, help me. All I want is someone to love me.
I will, Emily. I'll try.
And I mean forever, do you hear? Forever and ever and ever.
Yes, Emily, darling. Forever and ever.
There's the wedding bus. Come on, now they're waiting for us. Now off you go, George. Now, Emily,
you know it'll be all right, don't you?
Yes, Papa. I know it'll be all right. Here she comes. Oh, doesn't she make a lovely bride?
The go-kart, the Sunday afternoon drives in the roadster, the first rheumatism, the grandchildren, the second rheumatism, the deathbed, the reading of the will. Once in a thousand times, it's interesting.
I've never been to such a nice wedding. I'm sure I'll be happy. I always say, happiness, that's the great thing. The important thing is to be happy.
Friends, it's summer 1913. Gradual changes in Grover's Corners. Horses are getting rarer. Farmers coming into town now in cars. You'd be surprised, though. On the whole, things don't change much around here. By the way, we're not in Main Street now. No, this is the cemetery. And it lies above the town on a windy hilltop. Lots of sky, lots of clouds, often lots of sun and moon and stars. You can see Grover's Corners way down there. And over to the west, there are hills and hills, range on range of them. Awful blue they are. Yes, beautiful spot up here. Mountain laurel and lilacs. Over There under the trees are some Civil War veterans, iron flags on the graves. New Hampshire boys had a notion that the Union ought to be kept together, though they'd never seen more than 50 miles of it themselves. All they knew was the name, friends. The United States of America. And they went and died about it. This here's the new part of the cemetery. See those people sitting there in a long, straight row? They're some of the people you met in Grover's Corners. Your friend Mrs. Gibbs, she died 2 years last fall. There next to her is Simon Stimson, remember, the organist at the church? And Mrs. Soames, who was enjoying the wedding so much, she's here too. They're just sitting here quietly in the sun and the rain, looking on, you might say. Oh, they talk to each other now and then in a detached kind of way, but most of the time they're just sitting quiet and contented the way you see them now. You know, the dead don't stay interested in us living people for very long. Gradually they let go their hold of the earth, the ambitions they had and the pleasures they had and the things they suffered and the people they loved. They're waiting. Waiting for something they feel is coming, something important and great. Aren't they waiting for the eternal part in them to come out clear? Some of the things they're going to say, maybe it'll hurt your feelings, but that's the way it is. Mother and daughter, husband and wife, enemy and enemy, miser and money, all those terribly important things kind of grow pale around here. And what's left? What's left when memory's gone and your identity, Mrs. Smith? Well, here are some living people. There's Joe Stoddard, our undertaker, supervising a new-made grave. And here comes Sam Craig, a Grover's Corners boy that left town to go out west.
Good afternoon, Joe Stoddard. Remember me, Sam Craig?
Why, gracious sakes alive. Of course, I should have known you'd be back for the funeral, Sam. Say, you've been away a long time.
Over 12 years. But I happened to be over this side when I got news of my cousin's death. So I thought I'd come by and think a little and come back and see the old home. You look well, Joe.
Yeah, can't complain. Very sad our journey today, Samuel.
Yeah?
I must say, I hate to supervise when a young person's taken. Anyhow, they'll be here in a few minutes now. I had to come here early. You see, my son is supervising at home.
Yeah. A lot of new stones up here. Hi. This is my Aunt Julia. I'd forgotten.
Yeah, Doc Gibbs lost his wife 2 or 3 years ago, just about this time. And today's another bad blow for him, too.
Mrs. Gibbs has noticed him. She's just going to say something to Simon Stimson, who's sitting next to her.
Look, Simon, that's my sister Carrie's boy, Sam. Sam Craig.
I'm always uncomfortable when he's around, old Joe Stoddard.
Now, Simon.
Simon Stimson, huh? He was organist at church, wasn't he? Drank a lot, he used to say.
Yeah, but nobody was supposed to know about it. Oh, he'd seen a peck of trouble. He took his own life, you know.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Hung himself in the attic. Oh, they tried to hush it up, but of course it kind of got around. Showed his own epitaph. Usually they pick a verse, but his, well, it's kind of different. Look.
Oh, it's just some notes of music. What is it?
Oh, I wouldn't know. Just an idea he had, I guess.
Joe, how did she die of? My cousin, I mean.
Say, didn't you know?
No.
Oh, she had some trouble bringing a baby into the world. What's her second, though? There's a little boy about 4 years old.
Ah.
Well, you'll excuse me now. I see they're coming.
Who is it, Julia? My daughter-in-law, Emily Webb.
Well, I declare. The road up here must have been awfully muddy. What did she die of, Julia?
In childbirth.
Childbirth. I'd forgotten all about that. Why, wasn't life awful and wonderful?
Wonderful, was it?
Simon, now remember.
I remember Emily's wedding. Oh, lovely wedding it was. I called on them at their new farm just before I died. Perfectly beautiful farm. Here she comes now. Oh, lovely she looks in that white dress. Well, it's all coming back to me. That's the dress she was married in.
Hello.
Hello, Emily.
Hello, Mrs. Gibbs.
Hello, Simon. Hello, Mother Gibbs.
Emily?
It's raining. Mother Gibbs, all those people over there with the umbrellas, are they... Is it because of me?
Yes. They'll soon be gone, dear.
Papa remembered that was my favorite hymn. How nicely they sang it. I wish I could thank them.
Don't worry, dear. Just sit here and rest yourself.
Mother Gibbs, George and I have made that farm to just the best place you ever saw. We thought of you all the time. We wanted to show you the new barn and a great long cement drinking fountain for the stock. We bought that out of the money you left us.
I did?
Well, don't you remember, Mother Gibbs, the legacy you left us? Why, it was over $350.
Yes.
Well, there's a patent device on this drinking fountain so that it never overflows, Mother Gibbs, and it never sinks below a certain mark they have there. It's fine. It won't be the same to George without me, but it's a lovely farm. Look, the people are beginning to go now. They look so sad, all of them. Live people don't understand, do they?
No, dear. Not very much.
They're sort of shut up in little boxes, aren't they? I feel as though I knew him last 1,000 years ago. Mother Gibbs, when did this feeling go away? Of being one of them?
Dear, just wait and be patient.
They're nearly all gone now. Look, Father Gibbs is bringing some of my flowers to you. He looks just like George, doesn't he? Oh, Mother Gibbs, I never realized before how troubled and how in the dark live persons are. Look at him. I loved him so. From morning till night, that's all they are. Troubled.
Troubled? Yes.
They haven't all gone. There's a man just coming up the path.
Oh, he's often here.
Is he one of them?
I don't know, really. What is it he calls himself, Luella?
That man?
He's the stage manager. Stage manager, that's it. He talks to us sometimes.
He reminds me of someone. I can't think who.
Don't worry about it, dear.
Oh, he's also like the minister who married us, George and me.
Maybe. I don't remember.
If only one could go back. Mother Gibbs, one can go back. Back there again into living. I feel it. I know it. Oh, just then, for a moment, I was thinking about the farm. And for a minute, I was there. And my baby was on my lap as plain as day.
Yes, of course you
can. I can go back there and live all those days over again. Why not?
All I can say is, Emily, don't.
But why not? I'll ask that man, the stage manager. Didn't you call him? It's true, isn't it? I can go and live back there again.
Yes. Some have tried, but they soon come back here.
Don't do it, Emily.
Emily, don't. It's not what you think it'd be.
But Mrs. Stone.
You not only live it, but you watch yourself living it.
Yes.
And as you watch it, you see the thing that they down there never know. You see the future. You know what's going to happen afterwards.
But is that painful? Why?
That's not the only reason why you shouldn't do it, Emily. Our life here is to forget all that.
Oh, no.
And think only of what's ahead. And be ready for what's ahead. When you've been here longer, you'll understand.
But, Mother Gibbs, how can I ever forget that life? It's all I know. It's all I had.
Oh, Emily, it isn't wise. Really, it isn't.
But it's a thing I must know for myself. I'll choose a happy day anyway.
No. At least, choose an unimportant day. Choose the least important day in your life. It'll be important enough.
Then it can't be since I was married. Or since the baby was born. I can choose a birthday at least, can't I?
Yes.
Well, I choose my 12th birthday.
All right.
It's February the 11th, 1899, a Tuesday. We'll begin at dawn. You remember it had been snowing for several days, but it stopped the night before and they'd begun clearing the roads. Look, over there. The sun's coming up.
Mr. Morgan's drugstore before he changed. And there's the livery stable.
Yes, this is 14 years ago.
Oh, that's the town I knew as a little girl. And look, there's the old white fence that used to be around our house. And my dear butternut tree. Oh, I'd forgotten that. I love it so.
Do you see who's coming down the street?
It's our policeman. And there's Howie Newsom and Bessie and Joe Crew. But they're dead. All of them, they died.
Look at the house.
Oh, the house here. Yeah. Are they inside?
Yes, your mother will be coming downstairs in a minute to make breakfast. Yes, look, there she is, shaking the grate at the door.
Lovely to see you.
Judith, Wally, Emily, time to get up.
Oh, how young Mama looks. I didn't know Mama was ever that young. I'm here, Mama. I'm here.
You can come and dress for the kitchen fire if you like, but hurry. Your father should be home any minute now.
Remember, Emily? Your father came back on the early morning train. He'd been to his old college to make a speech way back in western New York. Look, here he is on the porch, shaking the snow off his boots.
Oh, yes. Papa, dear Papa.
Good morning, Mother.
How did you go, Charles?
Oh, fine, I guess. No, I told him a few things. Everything all right here?
Yes, can't think of anything that's happened special. It's been right cold. 10 degrees below, Harry Newsom says.
Well, it's been colder than that at Hamilton College. Students' ears are falling off. It ain't Christian.
Oh, I remember him saying that. Papa, that joke of his, I remember how it made us laugh.
Did the paper have any mistakes in it?
None that I noticed. Coffee's ready when you want it.
Oh, good.
Charles, don't forget it's Emily's birthday. Did you remember to get her anything?
Yes, I've got it in my pocket. Where's my birthday girl?
Don't interrupt her now, Charles. You can see her at breakfast. She's slow enough as it is. Hurry up, children. 7 o'clock. I don't want to call you again.
Oh, I can't bear it. They're so young and beautiful. When did they ever have to grow old? Mama, I'm here. I'm grown up. Oh, I love you all. Everything. I can't look at everything hard enough. Can I go in?
Yes, you can go in.
Good morning, Mama. Well, now, dear, very happy birthday to my girl. Many happy returns. There are surprises waiting for you on the kitchen table.
She doesn't seem to see me as I am, only as I used to be. I wanted so much to kiss her. She turned away to the stove almost as if I wasn't there.
You see, it's always like that.
Oh, Mama, you shouldn't have bothered. I can't go on.
Listen, your mother's saying something to you.
Now, Emily, birthday or no birthday, I want you to eat your breakfast good and slow. I want you to grow up and be a good, strong girl. That and the blue paper is from your Aunt Carrie. And I reckon you can guess who wrote the postcard album. I found it on the doorstep when I brought him the milk. George Gibbs. Must have come over in the cold pretty early. Right nice of him.
George, I'd forgotten that. If only she'd look at me. Mama, just look at me for 1 minute as though you really saw me.
But Mrs. Webb is busy stirring oatmeal at the stove, placid and smiling. She doesn't hear her. That's the way it is. Always.
Mama, 14 years have gone by. I'm dead. You're a grandmother, Mama. I married George Gibbs, Mama. Wally's dead, too. Mama, his appendix burst on the camping trip to Crawford Notch. We felt just terrible about it. Don't you remember? But now, just for a moment, we're all together. Mama, just for a moment, let's be happy. Let's look at one another.
That's your yellow paper, something I found in the attic among your grandmother's things. You're old enough to wear it now, and I thought you'd like it.
And this is from you. Oh, Mama, it's lovely. It's just what I want.
Well, I hope you'd like it. Hunt it all over. Wally has something for you, too. Made it a manual training class, and he's very proud of it. Be sure you make a big fuss about it. And your father has a surprise for you. Don't know what it is himself. Here he comes.
Well, where's my birthday girl?
They don't see me either of them. They only see someone who used to be me. I can't bear it.
That's a good girl. Sit down and eat your breakfast.
Where is my birthday?
I can't go on. It goes so fast. We haven't time to look at one another. I didn't realize. So all that was going on and we never noticed. Take me back up to the hill of my grave. But first, wait. One more look. Goodbye. Goodbye, world. Goodbye, Grover's Corners. Mama and Papa. Goodbye to clocks ticking. My butternut tree and new iron dresses and hot baths and sleeping and waking up. Oh, Earth, you're too wonderful for anyone to realize you. Tell me, do any human beings ever realize life while they live it, every minute?
No. Saints and poets, maybe. They do, some.
I'm ready to go back. I've come back, Mother Gibbs.
Were you happy?
No. I should have listened to you. That's all human beings are. Just blind people.
Look, it's clearing up. You'll be fine tomorrow.
Oh, Mr. Stimson, I should have listened to them.
Yes. Now you know. That's what it was to be alive. To move about in a cloud of ignorance. To go up and down trampling on the feelings of those about you. To spend and waste time as if you had millions of years. To be always at the mercy of one self-centered passion or another. Now you know. That's the happy existence you wanted to go back to. Ignorance and blindness.
That ain't the whole truth, and you know it, Simon Stimson. Someone else is coming up the hill.
Another of them.
That's funny. They don't usually come around this time.
Mother Gibbs, it's George.
Shh, dear. Just rest yourself.
It's George, kneeling at your grave.
Oh, poor fella. He ought to be home.
Mother Gibbs.
Yes, Emily.
They don't understand. Do they?
No, dear. They don't understand.
Most everybody's asleep in Grover's Corners. It's stopped raining, and there are the stars doing their old crisscross in the skies. Scholars haven't settled the matter yet, but they seem to think there are no living beings up there, just chalk or fire. Only this one is straining away all the time, trying to make something of itself. The strain's so great that every 16 hours, everybody lies down and gets a rest. O'clock in Grover's Corners. Everybody's resting in Grover's Corners. Tomorrow's going to be another day. You get a good rest, too. Good night.
Listening to Our Town by Thornton Wilder, adapted for broadcasting by Cynthia Pugh, with Martha Scott as Emily Webb, William Ice as George Gibbs, Tommy Duggan as Dr. Gibbs, Harry Ross as Harry Newsom, Margaret Boyd as Mrs. Gibbs, Lorna Davis as Mrs. Webb, Tucker McGuire as Rebecca Gibbs, Alan Pierce as Wally Webb, Frank Cram as Professor Willard, Hal Thompson as Mr. Webb, Rita Vale as Mrs. Soames, Janet Morrison as the artistic woman, Stephen Jack as Simon Stimson, and J. Adrian Byrne as Sam Craig. The stage manager was played by Stanley Maxted. Other parts were played by Sidney Keats, Larry Burns, and Eddie Reed. William Ice has just completed the film Meet Me at Dawn, and Martha Scott is at present working on the RKO picture So Well Remembered by James Hilton. The singers were a section of the BBC Variety Chorus, and the organist was Maurice Findon. The production was by Val Gielgud.